Okay, that's enough about the downs of life. How about the ups of life? Because life isn't all about suffering, it's all about sometimes the happy moments we have. And certainly as a monk, sometimes people think, oh, it's so hard being a monk these days. You know, I can't eat what I want, I can't watch the movies, I can't see the TV. You know, I only eat one meal a day, I have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. But actually, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning in my monastery is optional now. You can always get up earlier if you want to. But I have fun as a monk. I have a lot of good times and happy times. Well, I always manage to put happiness into whatever I have to do. For example, those of you who read the recent edition of the Buddhist Fellowship newsletter know that last March, only 2 months ago, I was invited to a state dinner with Queen Elizabeth. Because Queen Elizabeth II of England was visiting Australia for the Commonwealth Games. So there I was in my monastery, and a letter came from John Howard, the Prime Minister of Australia, inviting me to a state dinner with Queen Elizabeth. My problem was, when I read the invitation, there was, as you would expect of such an important occasion, a dress code. So I looked at what the dress code was. It was black tie. I don't have even a red tie or a brown tie. I have no ties. But what a black tie means like a dinner jacket, a tuxedo. And I didn't have one of those, and even if I did, I wouldn't wear it. Or military dress. And I don't have military dress. But the third option for the girls was long dress. And I looked at what I was wearing and I thought, I qualify as long dress. So I went in to the Parliament House in Canberra, to the Great Hall of Parliament House, wearing my monk's robe. And all these other very, very wealthy people, like Rupert Murdoch's son, Lachlan Murdoch, was there. I should have really brought a donation envelope with me, but I forgot. And all these other generals and commanders and ambassadors. And they were all in this, the women were all in this incredibly expensive jewelry, and the men in these sharp suits, and the generals, their chests were full of medals. And I went in my robe, just like this. So I got stopped by security. And the security said, are you supposed to be in here? I said, yes, here's my invitation. So they had to let me in. Now the trouble is, there's many things you can read about what I ate in the Buddhist Fellowship newsletter. But we also had the toast to Her Majesty the Queen. Would you please raise your wine glasses and toast the Queen? And you know that monks can't take alcohol. So I was the only one in the hall to toast Queen Elizabeth II with orange juice. But I have fun when I'm a monk in such situations. Beforehand, there was a reception in John Howard's house, residence in Sydney, called Kirribilli House. And there was not only Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip, but also one of the Queen's sons, Prince Edward. So because everybody was crowding around Queen Elizabeth, and because I was a compassionate monk, when I saw Prince Edward alone with no one to talk to him, I went up to say hello. Now, for those of you who know the British royal family, you know that Prince Edward, he's losing a lot of hair prematurely. So I went up to him and said, "You know, you're getting quite bald. If you lose any more hair, you could become a Buddhist monk just like me." I'm a very cheeky monk. But I have fun. And I'm going to let you into a secret. At another function which I was attending, which was actually in the cathedral in Sydney, just afterwards, actually just coming out of that, I saw a couple of members of the Buddhist Fellowship. They were driving down the street and they almost had an accident as they shouted out from the window, "Ajahn Brahm, Ajahn Brahm." So even Buddhist Fellowship members were in Sydney. But anyway, just before then, we had a service in the cathedral, interfaith service. And because I was one of the speakers representing the Buddhist community, I was in the choir of the cathedral. And Queen Elizabeth was in the front row. I had a direct view of her. Now the secret is, do you know why Queen Elizabeth always wears big hats with a wide rim? This is why. Because when I was looking at her, she had her head down like this. And every now and again, she would jerk it up. She was having a snooze during the sermon. And the wide rim meant that she could cover her eyes and the TV cameras couldn't see that she was asleep. You can imagine what it's like to be a queen, always having to listen to these boring speeches every day of your life. And I think in church they don't usually tell jokes like I tell. But anyhow, there's a few secrets which I'm sharing with you today. But even when you're either with a queen, you're going to have fun. Or whether you are with your friends in Singapore, you can have fun. Or whether you're flying, no, you can have fun. When you're on the ups, why can't you enjoy yourself? Why are we always afraid something's going to go wrong? Or someone is not going to like us? Or someone is not going to really think that we're a nice person? Why are you always so worried about your reputation and what other people think of you? I have been trying to tell all these jokes for a long time, to try and become unpopular. I've been trying my hardest to become unpopular in Singapore to try and get rid of some of you, because I'm causing a lot of problems for Venerable Kuang Sheng with all the car parking. But no, whatever happens in life, you can enjoy yourself, you can relax, whatever happens, have fun. And that way, you can make the good times last much longer. You ask any member of a stable relationship, what's most important to a girl when she's looking for a boy, or a boy with a girl? They want someone who's relaxed and has fun, who can make them laugh. Isn't it the case that laughter is the glue of friendship? It is even one of the most important things in a relationship together, to be able to not take yourself so seriously, to laugh at yourself and with other people, to sometimes laugh at life. Why are people so serious? One of the stories which you may read in the book, I found the power of laughter when I was in Thailand, because when things do go wrong, even then people laugh. For example, I used to often make mistakes. For example, when I was first learning Thai language, I often made such stupid mistakes that I made my teacher so happy. For example, that once I needed some soap. Now, the monastery was so poor that any gifts were just given to Ajahn Chah, the master, and he had it in a big water jar. So they gave him some toothpaste or some razor blades or whatever, he just put it all in the jar. If he needed something, he just came up to him and said, "Look, I need some toothpaste." And he would search around in the jar, "Here's some toothpaste, have this. But this time I needed some soap. But the problem is, I had to ask in Thai." And the word for soap in Thai is sabu. But I said sapo. It's quite close together, sabu and sapo. The problem was that sapo meant pineapple. So what actually happened, I went to my master and said, "Ajahn Chah, can I please have a pineapple?" So he looked at me and said, "What do you want a pineapple for?" So not being good in Thai, I had to use sign language. I said, "To wash." And so Ajahn Chah almost fell off his seat laughing. He told all the other Thais, "You know, Western culture is very different than Thai culture. In Thailand you use soap. You know, in England you use pineapples to wash." But the point was, even though it was a stupid mistake, he just laughed. And I learned to laugh as well. When I made a mistake, why not enjoy the mistake? Laugh at yourself. As one of my favorite sayings goes, when you make a mistake and you do something really silly, and other people laugh at you, you laugh as well. That way, the world never laughs at you, it only laughs with you. It never laughs at you, no one laughs at you, they only laugh with you. And when you do something really silly, make a big idiot of yourself, what a wonderful thing that is, you're making so many other people happy. So this is learning how to laugh at life. So when you learn how to laugh at life, of course, everybody knows, every doctor knows, it increases your life, increases your health, makes your relationships more happy, you're more successful in your business, because, as I'm going to say tomorrow at the International Human Resources Conference, success does not make you happy, happiness makes you successful. The finding which I've known for a long time, because happiness is the important ingredient for deep meditation and even for enlightenment. But also this was some research done in Harvard and Princeton. Yeah, even in worldly success, you don't become successful first and then become happy. It's the opposite way around. You're happy first. And then you become successful. Happy people usually get on with their bosses. You get promoted because people like happy people around. Happy people get on with their clients because even the clients like happy people. Look at all my clients. So whatever it is, happiness becomes the key to success. So in the good times, when the ups, please enjoy them. Have fun, enjoy the time you have with your loved ones, with your kids. You're having a good time. You're reasonably successful. Don't forget that. Sometimes people complain to me about their problems. I say, please keep them in perspective. Surely you may not have the best husband in Singapore, but you know, they're pretty good when you look at it. Come on, be honest. They may not be the prettiest wife in the whole of Southeast Asia, but they're pretty cuddly and nice. They may not be the most intelligent children. They may not all become going into the top universities. But would you really want to exchange them for anyone else? Don't you really love your kids and your parents and your friends? Would you really want to change this? Can't we have more gratitude for the good things which we have in life? Can't we appreciate the ups of life? When you learn how to appreciate the ups of life, you'll find a strange thing happens. The ups in life last much longer than expected. A lot of times we waste the opportunities to sustain prosperity and happiness and even health. Why? Because we just take it for granted. We take our partner for granted. We take our children for granted. We take our health for granted. We take the Buddhist fellowship for granted. Sometimes we don't appreciate enough. And so it's a great teaching to extend the ups and even just raise them even further, to have appreciation and to show that appreciation. Not just appreciation for your partner, to go up to them and say, look, I married you a long time ago. Sure, we have arguments and differences, but I really love you. I do really care for you. You've gone through so much together. Let's go through some more together. I appreciate our kids. Sure, we've asked them, we've encouraged them to do well at school, to work hard with all their exams. Sometimes they passed, sometimes they haven't done so well. But to take them aside, look, I encourage you, but it doesn't matter what you do, I'm always your father. I'm your mum. We'll always love you, no matter what you do. And even if you do fail terribly, terribly wrong, Ajahn Brahm said, I can always send you to his monastery to become a monk. And to appreciate your parents. But most of all, to have those ups last such a long time. Please appreciate yourself. To say to yourself, me, we've been through so much stuff together. Let's go through some more together, me. It's not easy being a monk, it's not easy being a wife, being a husband, being a parent, being a worker, being a boss, being whatever else you have to do in life. It's not easy being healthy or being sick with cancer. But can't we appreciate our journey instead of complaining? And look at ourselves with what Buddha called gratitude, not fault finding. To enjoy the happy part of life. I know that some time ago, many years ago, when I was visiting my mother for the first time in London, another monk called Ajahn Sumedho, a very great monk, he's the abbot of a sister monastery in England. He had just moved to England to start a monastery. His monastery was only 1 year old, and I was visiting, and as soon as he saw me, he said, right, I'm not letting you go anywhere, Ajahn Brahm, you're staying with me. He wanted me to stay in England, and obviously so did my mother and other family. But Ajahn Chah had different ideas. He asked me to come back to Thailand, and eventually off to Australia. But when I was there, Ajahn Sumedho took me to many, many places. And one retreat, which I looked after him at this retreat, was in the northern town of Doncaster. Doncaster was an old mining town. When we arrived there on the Saturday morning, the host of the retreat said it's very strange because Doncaster is the sort of town which people leave on the weekend. And here you guys visiting on the weekend. It was a run-down, very poor coal mining town. Now, when it came to the morning, we could go on a walk. So Ajahn Sumedho and I went for a walk to the gardens. There's some beautiful public gardens. We went into a nice church. We had a walk by in other parks. And when we went back, our host said, "Where did you go to a walk to?" And we said, "Oh, we went to the gardens. There's a nice church, a nice river. We had a walk along that. We had a lovely walk." And our host said, "You know, that's very interesting, because you two guys are such positive guys." A few weeks before, another monk came. When he went for a walk, he went for a walk to the gasworks and the canal and the old industrial waste dumps. He said, "It's very interesting, when you go for a walk, where do you incline towards? Do you go to a walk to the waste dumps of life, or do you go to the gardens of life?" Now the metaphor is, when your mind goes for a walk, thinking, do you visit the gardens of life, or do you visit the gasworks of life? The stinky, smelling, industrial wastelands. What do you think of when you think of your wife? All her faults? All the stuff which she's done wrong? All the arguments you've had with her? Do you visit the gasworks of life? Or when you think of her, do you visit the gardens? Or the beautiful times you've had together? Are you a fault finder or one who has a positive mind? When you think about your past, what do you think about? Do you understand what I'm talking about? If you don't, there's an old story, I don't know when it was the last time I told it here, of the two chicken farmers. Two chicken farmers. The first chicken farmer went to their shed in the early morning to collect the produce of the day before. They took the basket and they filled the basket with chicken shit, and they left all the eggs in the shed to rot. That was a very stupid, dumb chicken farmer. The second chicken farmer went to the shed with the basket and collected all the eggs and left the chicken dung in the shed to rot. That was a smart chicken farmer, because he could make an omelette for his family and sell the rest of the eggs in the market for money. Ajahn Chah used to tell that story, and he used to ask afterwards, "Which type of chicken farmer are you? When you collect all the things which happened to you in the past 24 hours, what do you collect? The shit or the eggs?" Do you understand? When you remember your husband, what do you collect? All the wonderful times you've had together, or all the problems you've had? Why is it that too many of us, when we collect the experience of the past, only collect the shit and leave the eggs to rot? Now this is very important in life, because too many of us are fault finders, negative, we only remember what went wrong. We think of all the terrible things which happened, and that's what we keep in our mind. Even when we look at ourselves, what do you collect about yourself? The good stuff or the rotten stuff? Many people, when they think about their childhood, their adolescence, the early years of their marriage, what do you remember? What do you collect? The positive people who know how to enjoy life collect the good stuff, and they leave all the mistakes in the past to disappear. They don't carry the mistakes into the future, they only carry the successes. Because you learn more from your successes than you learn from your faults. You remember your faults, you just get negative and depressed. Is there a lot of trouble with depression in Singapore? Do you know many people depressed? Why? Because we keep remembering our faults instead of remembering our successes. Now that's how you make the good times last longer. You collect the ups. You learn from the ups. You remember the ups. You analyze the ups. You learn from the ups until you become an expert in ups. You never get depressed, you get up-pressed. You just get a happier person. Why can't we do that? So when you know about the ups and downs of life, the downs you learn from, when they're there, but as soon as they're gone, finished. The ups, they're the ones you really remember. And of all the learning you do, really it's the ups where you learn the best. When you're happy, how does it feel? Why can't we learn from that and make ourselves happy again? Your happy times are kindness, giving, generosity, to spending time with each other. That's what makes you happy. Can't you learn from that? And then your life will have more ups than downs. Be an elevator which keeps going up, hardly ever goes down. So you too will rise to the upper realms, the higher levels. You're already pretty high now. On the, was it the sixth story, the fourth story of Kong Wing Sun? So you're on the ups, and on the up and up and up. So may you enjoy your life. May you learn from your successes. When there is troubles in life, remember that's part of life. We learn from that as well. Which means that whatever happens to us in our life. Thank you so much for teaching us. Thank you.
阿詹这里呢就讲到这个生活中起的部分应该怎么处理呢。那么他说其实很多人以为生人的生活是非常艰苦的，那么成为一个生人一定是一件很痛苦的事情，因为一个生人要守太多的戒律，比如说要在四点钟起床，要过午不食等等。那么阿詹处理这个问题的方法呢，是从他简单艰苦的生活中取得欢乐。那么这里呢，他给了一个例子，他有一次被伊丽莎白女皇请到一个晚宴，那么这时问题出现呢，因为她穿的是袈裟，她有特定的这个衣服的规定，但是她不能穿燕尾服，不能穿这个黑领带等等，只有一个办法，就是她规定里头呢，女士可以穿长裙，这最符合她的这个仪式，所以她就穿了袈裟出席了这个晚宴。 在这个晚宴里头呢，他碰到很多的人，名人、军事领袖、富贵的女士等等，甚至这个保安人员起初也不让他进入，直到他出示这个邀请卡为止，甚至在他敬酒的时候，他也不能以酒向这个英女皇敬酒，只能以橙汁敬酒。不过呢，虽然他的生活是跟别人不大一样，但是他还会取悦自己。 比如说，他就跟这个爱德华王子说：“如果你再这么烦恼下去的话，恐怕你这个比较微小的这个秃头问题会很严重，直到有一天你会跟一个僧人一样是秃头的。”在寺院里头呢，阿詹的生活是非常艰苦的。 当时呢，阿詹的这个导师是阿詹茶。有一次呢，就是在这寺院里头，所有的赠礼都是捐给这个阿詹茶的。有一天，他这个牙膏不够了，结果就去找这个阿詹茶要。当时他的泰语不是很好，他就跟阿詹茶说：“我想跟你讨一点这个 super。” 结果呢，这个 supo 的意思其实是凤梨，阿占茶就取笑说，西方文化真是很不一样，既然用这个凤梨来洗澡。虽然呢，这个他是做错了事情，不过呢，他却能懂得取悦自己啊。结果阿占茶跟阿占班两个人都欢笑了一场啊。因为呢，如果我们从各种艰苦的生活中懂得怎么取悦自己，怎么一起和别人一起笑的话，那么世界永远不会取笑你啊，只会和你一起欢笑。那每个医生都知道，笑能够减少病痛，笑能够带给你生意上面的成功啊，也可以给你很多不同的帮助啊。阿占这时就引述了一个研究报道啊，一个成功人在成功之前一定是开心的，但是如果，对不起，我再重复一下。在成功之前一个人一定是开心的，但是如果你开心的话，哇，真的很难翻译。我跳过这个部分，我想大家都应该明白。很多人呢曾经向阿占投诉过一些问题啊，比如说生活上啊，这个婚姻方面的问题。阿占常常呢就这么告诉他们不要把你的问题太过夸大，应该以正确的角度分析问题。当然，你的丈夫不是最完美的，你的太太不是最美丽的，你的孩子也不是最聪明的，但是你的丈夫绝对不是最烂的，你的老婆也不是最丑的，你的孩子也不是最笨的。在生活里头，我们要学会怎么感恩，在自己生活中在幸福的部分里头呢，要特别的懂得感恩。如果我们懂得在自己生活幸福的部分里头感恩的话，它会持续的比较久啊。那么也不要以为生活中幸福的部分是理所当然的要懂得怎么珍惜啊。比如说呢，如果一个丈夫要珍惜这个太太的话，丈夫应该对太太说我们两个在这么多年来经历很多，但是我仍然非常的爱你，希望呢我们可以继续走下去。如果孩子成绩不好的话，那么父母也可以跟孩子说不管你成绩这么差我还是你的父母，仍然会非常疼爱你的。那么呢，阿占建议我们要常常对自己说经历了这么多我跟我自己经历了这么多谢谢你对自己感恩，然后从而享受生活中的喜的部分比如说阿占有一个好友阿占苏密多，他在英国开设了一个寺院有一次阿占布兰去探望他的时候，阿占苏密多就不肯放他走希望他留下来阿占布兰的母亲也是在英国居住，当然也不希望阿占布兰搬走。不过阿占查就是阿占布兰的老师，就是希望阿占布兰去泰国，过后就去就派阿占布兰去这个澳洲开设这个寺院。那么有一次呢，这个阿占苏密就带他去一个地方游玩，这个地方呢是周末很少人去的，甚至说当地的居民到了周末都会往其他的城市去玩。那么这个时候呢，接待阿占布兰跟阿占苏密的人就很好奇，因为很少人来这里游玩。那么刚好那天是早上，阿占布兰跟阿占苏密都就去花园河流旁边这个散步，他们很享受这个简单的生活。当他回来的时候呢，主人就说你今天的旅程怎么样？那么阿占布兰阿占苏密都觉得说今天其实过得很开心。那主人就很惊讶，他觉得说这两位僧人的这个生活态度非常的正面。反观前几个礼拜来了一位出家众一位僧人，他却非常的悲观，常常往这些废墟里头走。那么他觉得说这样很奇怪。那么我们人生中呢有花园也是有废墟当我们想到妻子的时候呢，我们是想到妻子的废墟吗？还是想到妻子的这个花园？那么想到自己的过去生活的时候呢，我们想到的好的多一点呢，还是坏的多一点呢？那么我们在生活中是否应该多看一看生活里头美丽的花园不要整天去看不好看的废墟。那么这时候呢，阿占又给了另外一个比喻曾经呢有两个这个养鸡的农人那么有一个农人呢就选择在每天早上到鸡寮鸡棚那里收集着鸡屎，把鸡蛋留在鸡棚里头。那么另外一个这个农夫呢就专门捡鸡蛋去把鸡屎留在鸡棚里头。 那么当然捡鸡蛋的是有智慧的人啊，因为呢他懂得他把鸡蛋取回去以后可以为家人这个煮这个蛋吃，然后把这个蛋售卖掉，从中取得利润啊。那么同样的，生活里头我们应该捡的是鸡屎还是鸡蛋呢？啊，当然是鸡蛋。不过太多的时候呢，我们比较习惯性的专捡鸡屎，收集在心里头，不捡应该捡的鸡蛋。那么我们应该常常观想自己的心啊，想一想自己的心是在收集鸡屎还是鸡蛋啊。那么一个有智慧的人呢，是一个懂得怎么把成功的部分往这个前面走的一个人啊，他不会把缺点和失败背在这个肩膀上往前走，因为从成功中学到的会比从这个失败中学到的或许更多啊。如果我们可以持续的这样的想话，那么我们生活中的起的地方会越来越多，我们会成为生活中起的部分的专家。那么当我们开心的时候感觉是怎么样的呢？我们行善的时候感觉是什么样的呢？当然是非常开心的。我们应该从这些经历头学习怎么做一个开心的人。那么我们应该这么样的修持下去，直到有一天我们发现生活里头全部都是起的部分，那么这样子在我们死去的时候往生的地方也会是更好的地方。谢谢大家。
Thank you Dr. Han Yu for the translation. Since we are going to have a bit of difficulty getting questions from you, somebody did pass me a question, so I'll ask it on his behalf. Ajahn, he askedIf you're seeing someone in the hospital and he's dying, what's the best thing to say and without upsetting the family?
We see somebody in the hospital and they're dying. Actually, everybody in the hospital is dying. Just a matter of how long it's going to take, whether it's 30 years or 30 seconds. If somebody in the hospital is dying, first of all, remember that the person who's dying knows it very well. In many cases, they know they're about to go.Remember, there's nothing wrong with dying. You've done it many times before. Please make sure this time you get it right. So first of all, to take the fear away from dying. And lastly, to make sure that the family may also understand the process of dying, that they've been looking after their loved one for such a long time,And the best way you can express your love for someone who's dying is to let them go. You clinging on to them, praying, please live, don't leave us. That is very selfish sometimes, understandable, but it gives the person who is dying extra problems. They have to not just concern themselves with their own impending death, they also have to worry aboutTheir loved ones as well. That's very hard. So, if you are looking at someone who's about to die, give them permission to die. Tell them you love them so much, it's all right to die. The time is up, it's come to an end in this life. We've enjoyed your company so much, we've had a wonderful time together.Thank you so much. I love you enough to let you go. Farewell.
One of the biggest thieves in life is when we feel that other people have wronged us and we are unable to forgive. So what's your best advice to help people to forgive so they could actually find the happiness in their lives again?
Okay, there was two Australian soldiers.They were meeting together in a reunion. One of them said to the other, they'd both been in the Malaya, in Singapore, they'd both been interned by the Japanese up at Changi. One of them asked the other, have you forgiven the Japanese for what they did to us during the war? And his friend said, no, never. Well, I saw how they treated us and our friends. I can never forgive them. What about you? And his friend said, I forgave them years ago. You, my friend, are still in the POW camp. Do you understand? Until you forgive, you are still a victim. You are still suffering. You are still in that situation. As soon as you forgive, then you are free. It doesn't matter what the other person does. If they were a Christian, God will punish them. If they were Muslim, Allah will punish. If they were Buddhist, law of karma, they'll take care of it. And if they don't believe in any religion, they'll probably have to see a psychotherapist for many, many years. In other words, no one gets away with it. So you do not need to give up your own happiness because of what they did to you. Whatever they did, let it go. Be happy, be free, in spite of them.
Thank you, Ajahn Brahm. I think let's give him a round of applause for the wonderful talk tonight. Shall we, in a tradition of Buddhists, say the word three times, as in rejoice, in Pali, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
That's terrible.
Oh.
They don't say sadhu that way. Come on. Sadhu.
Sadhu. Sadhu. Sadhu. Sadhu.